everybody. Welcome back to Pack Your Mics, the Top Chef podcast from the creators of Read It and Weep. I'm Alex Falcone, sitting back in for Tanya. I'm here in Portland with Megan. And joining us in Brooklyn today, it's Tanya and Chris.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi.
Great job hosting last week, Tanya.
Oh, thanks, guy.
It was so good. And you added some new segment features, and I liked that.
Well, there was an avalanche of listener mail, so we had to go deep.
I like it. I'm going to try the same thing this week where we integrate the questions as they are relevant to the conversation. Although it'll be a little easier this week because the one trying thing about it was that all six of you would sing just slight variations of the same note for the mailbag jingle.
Yeah.
And it was a little discordant.
No, it was perfect. You're wrong.
I think everyone really enjoyed our vocal stylings.
Yeah.
I got to say, the mailbag was surprisingly light on compliments for the mailbag song. People liked the dinging. I can't say everyone loved the singing.
Hey,
I think
you get what you get, so don't be upset.
I feel like most people were just like, that happened. I don't know that anyone was super specific about, like, the song. Here are the parts that I liked and here are the parts that I hated.
Yeah, it's not like we had mailbag song rehearsal time.
No, you guys did great. But I'm just, we're short Ezra, Sarah, and Baby this week. They're traveling, yeah. And we're not able to get Wi-Fi that was sufficient for this call. So we are going to be just the four of us today. And so maybe we'll have two to three voices singing the mailbag theme song when it comes up.
Oh, wait, you're cutting someone from the mailbag theme song? Is that what you're saying?
I was thinking...
This is not American Idol.
Yeah. Chris, you've had a good run. Pack your voice and go.
I meant me. I meant I wasn't going to sing.
Or did you want to, like, assign us a note that we're trying to hit? Because I don't want to do that either.
All right.
I said a G.
This week, we are talking about episode 12.08, Cleanup on Aisle 2.
Cleanup!
I want to say really quick, I was so sad not to be able to talk to you guys last week. I really, really, really liked Restaurant Wars. I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was perfect.
Didn't Dougie and Adam do a good job?
They did a great job. It's so good to see Dougie. Wait, first of all, let's go back a second. Is everybody calling him Dougie, or is Gail just forcing that on the rest of the world?
Literally
everyone.
Oh, go ahead, Megan. Yeah.
Well, Gail was just really pushing the Dougie thing, and I thought, I was like, maybe this is like a... you know, between friends sort of thing and not between, like, the judge and the contestant.
It felt like she was trying to get in on their fun, and
yeah.
I didn't get the... I wasn't sure if it was, like... It felt like she had a Dougie agenda.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
That he won, she called him Dougie.
Yeah, but she also called him Dougie when they were at his table, which I thought was great.
But we've seen this...
She's like, great job, Dougie. And I was like, yes!
This happened last season. There was somebody that went by a nickname or something like that, or something like that. And about halfway through, or like the last third of the season, they started using that nickname. The judges did.
I like it. It definitely makes it feel like they're friends, which I like when the judges and the... people friends, just there's a lot of things like that this episode. It's super fun, but anyway, so Doug, it was great seeing Dougie do well. This is the season of Portland, you guys. Portland's killing it this whole time. But yeah, Adam, I loved, like, Goofus and Gallant as the two restaurants. That was so fun to watch last time, just someone doing great, someone doing badly. I think that Gregory got a harder time. This is the only thing that I wanted to make sure I got in here. I think people gave Gregory a harder time than he deserved.
Oh, no, I'm still Team Gregory for sure. I don't think he's a villain, and I don't think he means ill. Ever.
Yeah, I guess I just thought that it seemed like he was genuinely afeared from his brush with death with the Goose episode. Like, I felt like he came back timidly and not intentionally snaky. Like, I'm going to sneak through. I thought he was like, I'm afraid that I'll lose if I try too many crazy ideas again.
Yeah,
there was that. But, you know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again here on the air. I don't trust ultra runners. And if he can run 50 miles, I don't want a part of anything that he does.
Well, you think his plan is just to, like, kill someone on Top Chef and then run away?
Yeah, because he could run away.
He could run to another city.
He could put another 50 miles between him and the body just like that.
I think that takes several hours.
It does, but...
He's not carrying that gel that runners have?
I bet he has some gel that he could slurp or something. I don't know.
Oh, goo?
Yeah, goo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, what car is sponsoring Top Chef right now?
It's probably still Toyota.
The Toyota Previa. He's not a Toyota Previa.
Previa was a 90s minivan.
I know.
He he didn't put that body into a several different Glad bags and then run.
You know what, you guys? There was not like a cell phone that was featured on Restaurant Wars.
They were, as you mentioned, Chris, they were holding them out and talking onto them in that awkward reality TV way. But yeah, it did not seem like it wasn't. Like, our T-Mobile smartphones.
Yeah.
Everybody's using Amazon Fire phones this year.
That would have been weird.
Yeah, it would have been.
Those are the whole all 7 people in the world who are using the Fire phones.
I don't think Amazon would have gone for that because they also have a grocery service. So it's a conflict.
Interesting. So let's catch up with this week now. Let's jump into Clean Up on aisle 2. Fun episode. Let's start with the quick fire. It's time to make chowder. I don't think we actually... Did we even mention this when we were talking about obvious Boston challenges? I feel like
it came up.
Okay, good.
I feel confident that it came up.
Yeah.
It should have, for sure. Good job to whoever thought of that. But classic chowder competition, including someone, Adam, who is from Manhattan, trying to make some Manhattan clam chowder and get away with it.
Yeah.
I think it worked,
not real chowder. Right? It's tomato soup with clams, you jerk.
Yeah. But he made a great version. They liked it. Yeah. It worked really well.
I was going to say, I feel like, if you're writing about 50 different chowders, it seems entirely possible that you probably at some point mentioned the Manhattan clam chowder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your guys' favorite kind of chowder?
I like a corn chowder.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was going to say corn chowder.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because you had a really bad
clams anymore.
But also, I can only think of the two, clam and corn, so that was kind of my other option.
Clam chowder used to be like my favorite food. And then I abruptly stopped liking it, as I sometimes do with food.
You do that. With the Manhattan and New England clam chowder thing, I remember having gotten Manhattan clam chowder at one point as a kid and being so upset because I was expecting cream.
Yeah.
And cream was so delicious.
None.
Yeah.
I think I like clam chowder. I had a really bad corn experience this week, so I've been kind of off the corn bandwagon.
Is there a third chowder? How are there 50 chowders?
Well, I think it's like clam chowder with oysters. Clam chowder with a carrot in it.
Except the oysters.
Clam chowder outside.
Clam chowder in a box. This seems like you're stretching a little for this cookbook.
Yeah, clam chowder in cardboard. Clam chowder in wax cardboard.
Yeah, the oysters, though, this did not seem to go well. For
nobody
who
added the oysters did well. I think they were all overpowering the subtle flavor of the oyster. Is that what it was?
No, it's the oyster made it too salty, apparently.
Oh.
That's what they said. So the two of the three bottoms were the two people who did oysters.
Yeah. Well, so I think the chowder part of this challenge was way less important and interesting than bringing back a losing chef. So let's talk about that. That's what everyone's excited about.
This was a sudden death quickfire, right?
It was a sudden death quickfire and also a sudden back to life quickfire. So the losing chef, Katie, got to pick another chef, or did not get to pick another chef to go against. Instead, all of the losing chefs came out, stood in a line, and then they voted on who amongst them would go against Katie for the right to get back into the round.
But you can't pick yourself.
You can't pick yourself, yeah.
Which is good, because otherwise it would have been a tie at one.
Everyone goes, me, me, me.
And then one person would have said George, and he would have won. So what do you guys... Okay, overall, general moral feelings, bringing a chef back in at this point in the competition, how do you feel?
I liked it.
Yeah?
Okay,
yeah.
Why?
No, I think I thought it was interesting because I felt like it changed up the dynamic, and it also it sort of highlighted how close-knit the chefs have gotten to be at this point. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was uncomfortable for everyone. But
yeah, highlighted by making it awkward that someone wasn't
but
in
I
that
liked,
group.
But I liked the sort of the shift because, like, I don't know. I feel like everyone's pretty much in agreement that we're villainless right now. There isn't really like there's not like an evil, so now there's like a new kid, and like we kind of have to figure out like what that means instead.
And he doesn't really know how to cook on a timer, so he's sort of like the homeschooled kid who just showed up and had missed a bunch of grades.
Yeah, that's interesting because like you know it could have been somebody who just got eliminated, that did this, but instead it was George who everybody felt was pretty strong and got eliminated in the first episode.
And
in
I liked that made them everyone fire. Nervous. Is like he's an unknown quantity, and also I really liked the insight. And I can't remember which chef pointed this out, but they were like, "Yeah, he's back. He's been resting. He has all these recipes that he didn't get to use.
Like Gregory.
And I thought that was really interesting that you, like, you're sort of thinking about your mental Rolodex of, like, things you know how to do or things you know how to, like, improvise.
Yeah.
And, like, Greg, or not Greg, George now doesn't have any of that. Like, he hasn't used anything yet. So he's, he's an unknown.
I really liked that, because, I mean, I hated that he got out without really having had a good chance, you know, because it was that quick fire, right?
Yeah, I believe it was a quick fire on the first episode that he went out on.
Yeah, it was. He went out basically without ever doing an elimination challenge.
Yeah.
And that sucks. But at the same time, and so I sort of like that he's getting this second chance to get back in. But at the same time, just like being able to sort of time travel through over half.
Yeah.
The
yeah. He got a bye for seven episodes.
Like, it just doesn't seem very fair. And like, if he does end up winning, I don't know. Like, it seems like that, you know, there's so many opportunities for even like a really strong chef to make a misstep in an elimination challenge. And if you just get to skip those. I don't know. It's just weird about it.
I think that, well, originally I was feeling like, yeah, he got this bye for all of these rounds, and so he's going to be rested. He's not drunk. Like, he's got all these advantages. But a lot of the times on Top Chef, an advantage is secretly a disadvantage. And I was wondering, because, like, he also had a real hard time with the timer the first few times. So even though he hasn't used his recipes, everyone else is in the groove, and he's not. And so it might be harder coming off the bench cold. So,
yeah.
I don't know. And also, I think he deserves so many props for his rabbit decision, his split rabbit idea. So they were both had to cook. So the challenge for the short cook-off with him and Katie, who I don't feel even a little bit bad that she got eliminated because she's been trying on a quick fire, because she's been trying so hard to get eliminated all season. But they were cooking. They had to cook rabbit.
I don't like that reading at all.
She
fixed a pudding once that was not good on a baseball field. She made it better.
She had a couple of other, like, really
strong
moments.
I think she's been challenged and surprised us several times over the course of her time
on
Top Chef.
But in general, has cooked pretty safe food.
And she's not a person that I saw going to the end, but no. I also really appreciated that she took the experiences that she had and she was able to really thrive in that environment.
Totally.
For a while.
I liked her. I just meant that if anyone else had gone home on a quick fire, we would be much more upset than since it was her.
Oh, yeah, if any of the other people.
If May had gotten eliminated, which touch and go, like, that would have been a real upsetting tournament.
Well, here's the thing
about...
I just didn't
like the trying to get eliminated.
I was being crass. I understand.
You were being crass. That's right.
But what I wanted to say was, George... So they had to cook a rabbit in this cook-off, and both went for legs, I think. Katie and George both went for legs, and they were both worried they wouldn't be done. And so George also cleaned the loin and was like, I'll throw this in. I know it cooks in 5 minutes. I'll have this just in case. Didn't like his legs, went with the loin, and it was perfectly cooked. And Katie's legs were not as well cooked. And that, it just was such a smart maneuver, and in a short period of time to have that backup and to just know exactly what to do to survive. I was really impressed with that move.
I agree. That was totally smart.
It was a good move. Yeah.
And it also gives you a flavor for his survival skills going into the Lion's
the
Den.
Top six. Or top seven? What are we at?
How
many do we have left?
Well, so we lost one and then got one back and then we lost another one. So we're down to six now. Let's see. Let's do a couple of mailbags.
Mailbag!
Nice. So J number two, or number one, I never remember, on packyourmics.com. Said a comment. Oh, he thought it was a super awkward element that the loser chefs had to dress in their own chef coats, march into the studio single file following Tom and his mystery cloche, and then vote for someone else to get back into the competition, and then stand around awkwardly while George and Katie cook and prep at the table, and then they just had to leave. Like, they just did nothing.
You're a prop, basically.
Yeah, the voting struck me as being especially weird.
Yeah. Well, we had another mailbag. We had somebody else. I think it was Numrata, who said
Numrata. I'm trying. I'm sorry. I kept butchering her name last time. I think I said it differently every time I said it. And Ez isn't here, and he's the only one who nailed it.
But she said that she thinks George voted for Aaron just because in case Aaron had to cook, he at least would have a chance of not having to share a room with Aaron anymore.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, Jay also said that he was imagining everybody like back in the losers' hotel, wherever they have to go, where all the ex-chefs, somebody had to sit there across the table from Douche Hat just eating a sullen, quiet breakfast. It must be super awkward. I'm really curious about what loser house is like. Someone else in the mailbag referred to it as the Motel 6 that they're all stuck in. I'm super curious what they do once they get eliminated and where they go, because they clearly didn't go home.
They actually like put them in a different section of the hotel where the like contestants are staying?
Oh boy!
And you like see them at the weird like buffet situation.
Oh yeah, you bump into them
downstairs
in the line for breakfast.
They're like sitting eating like drinking hotel coffee, and like the other chefs like run out the door, and they're like,
they have to share an elevator. Oh,
oh God.
Also one more thing, one more mailbag.
Mailbag.
So Joan on Facebook said, and we didn't mention this yet, but there was this really weird moment with the clams getting stealing clams.
Yeah, so
May
took the little neck clams. Adam asked to share, and so he took half, and then Melissa just didn't ask and took all but three of them from May's station, and May was feeling totally screwed over and had to use quote unquote shitty steamers instead.
Yeah,
and then
it
her
messed
dish
up her
was
dish.
On the bottom because they didn't have enough flavor.
Yeah.
Shitty steamers, by the way, is the worst sounding food ingredient.
Yeah. But also one of the best roller derby names to come out of Top Chef.
That's pretty good. That's way better than when people say that would be a good band name, and it almost never would actually be a good name for a band, but it almost always would be a good name for a roller derby team or player. Anyway, so Joan said that, said, quote, "I think what Melissa did was very ugly. You could not steal from another chef's table. You can ask even with assertivity, ooh, I like that, like Adam did, but not going behind her back, and I think May took it even too well."
Yeah, she did. There was no discussion of it afterward. Like, she didn't ever say, like, "Hey, Melissa, noticed you had some little necks in your dish."
Yeah, that was weird because last week on Restaurant Wars, May was talking about how she and Melissa were really
homies.
Close and how she was really hoping that it would be Melissa and her as the last two.
Yeah,
and like, but if that happens, Melissa's just going to steal the food off your station.
Yeah. Maybe May's getting back at her by like short sheeting in her bed or something like that back in the apartment.
Could be, yeah.
Do you think that maybe...
Like all of those, the parent trap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, little pranks.
Like, Melissa's just going around with a bell, like, in case there are bears.
Wasn't one of those traps like there was a bunch of honey and so a bear came into their cabin?
Yeah, well, she used honey on her hair.
Yeah, and there was like a bear.
That's really dangerous.
They really downplayed the dangers of a bear in your cabin.
Just keep
movie.
It to warm water and like putting people's hands in it while they're sleeping.
Yeah, let them pee themselves at the end. But do you think maybe because Melissa and May were friends, that's why Melissa thought it was okay?
I don't know.
No, Melissa, I don't think, at least in her interview, didn't say anything about because May and I are close. It was, I really wanted those clams and you got to do what you got to do to win.
So. I feel like she was mad. Melissa was mad because May took the whole bucket and she didn't feel like she knew the whole
bucket. And that's what I wonder about. We never get to see those behind the scenes briefings that the elves come in and do with people because we know that there's more rules than we ever hear, because we see clips every once in a while where it matters, where it's like you can't. Oh, there was like a season 2 thing where someone looked at a recipe book in their hotel or something.
Yeah, or there's been, I can't remember, for some important backstory, we actually saw like a snippet of like a PA with a clipboard standing there being like, "Here are the other rules. Does everyone understand? Please nod if you understand."
So we never get those. And so I don't understand what the actual rule is about when there's a pile of food on a table, because if you take 1,000 clams on a clam challenge, it does feel a little bit like, are there maximum numbers of clams you can take? Is there a rule about how many of what?
Yeah, and I do think it's kind of everyone for themselves.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I feel like it's often everyone for themselves. We've had issues where people had extras of something that someone else needed, and they like said, like, "Yeah, I got all this fennel sitting over here, but I'm not going to tell anyone about it."
Right, right. Like, there was an episode where somebody took like all the butter. I mean, it's weird. It's weird if you're just allowed to do that, and it seems like most of the time the chefs are nice enough that if you ask, they will give you extras. Mm-hmm. But it's weird that you can just take all of the butter. I don't know. So I felt like it definitely, you can't then go to their table and without asking, take everything so that they have none. That doesn't seem fair either.
No, that seemed like a terrible move. And I feel like I'm confused as to how they did that, that happened. And there was never any like stew room discussion.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, with the Little Necks, it was just, they were in a, you know, kind of buckety thing and it was grabbable and May wanted it. So she grabbed it.
Right. But as she grabbed it, Adam was like, share.
Nodded.
And she was like, sure.
Yeah.
And then they split them. And then,
well, we actually,
like, yoink.
We actually had a similar thing later where Tom took all of the eggplants in Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Oh, let's get on to the elimination challenge.
Sorry. Gregory won with something coconut. It was fine.
No,
that was later. With the chowder. And Katie also went home for gummy chowder and then she lost to George with the loins. So,
yeah, sourdough in her chowder, which made upset.
I'm just gonna put sourdough bread to gum up my chowder.
Gum up my chowder with some sour lumps.
It sounded really
gross.
But two things. First of all, chowder in a bread bowl is delicious and is usually made out of sourdough.
Okay. Yep.
And number two, chowder dough. It's right there. It's just a perfect combination
of
words.
Bread in disgusting. The chowder and it like disintegrates and just becomes gummy technique.
It's such a nightmare.
She didn't come anywhere close.
The last thing I want to say about the quick fire is just that we had part one of Dougie giving compliments that didn't sound like compliments, then ended up being compliments.
Doug sounds so sarcastic in his interviews.
I looked over and Gregory's making another like Thai curry, but like he's gotten this far with his Thai curry, so like more power to him.
He sounds so sarcastic, but there's never a punchline, so it turns out he just sounds that way and he's being genuinely nice.
Yeah, and Chris and I had like a long discussion about like, was he serious?
Was he being shitty?
Was that
Doug being a little shit?
And I was like, I feel like when he's mean, we know. So this was a nice thing that he said, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Like, wow, he's really good at these curries.
I know.
When he said it in this way, it's like he's making another curry. But
it's,
go for it.
It started out
man.
Shady and took this weird left turn into actual appreciation.
I can't tell what's going on.
It really did.
Can't tell. So let's jump into the elimination. So for the elimination challenge, they had to make tasting plates for 75 Top Chef fans.
Yep.
I just can't get past the fact that we were not there. Why not us, guys?
We're not in Boston, you weirdo.
Well,
what
we
are
didn't
you
catch
about?
That tweet in the offseason.
I would have flown to Boston for this. I 100%
would have
done
that. But it was for Bostonians.
Well, you didn't
it's
feel
for people
even
who actually
pang
live
of jealousy
there.
When this happened, when they were
super fans?
I was jealous that I hadn't like been aggressive when they were in Seattle, and I was also living in Seattle.
Yeah.
That would have made a ton of sense, but not when it's for people of Boston who love Top Chef. That's not me.
We're press. I don't know.
Stop it.
I was feeling like these two Portland chefs are doing really well, and so maybe Top Chef is going to come to Portland soon. And so I was like looking for hints of like how, these people ended up on the show. And so there was this one part where we didn't quite hear. And I was like, Alex, rewind. And it was like this woman like, we were in Puerto Rico and we were about to get on a flight. And then we saw the tweet and now we're here. And I was like, okay, we got to go to Puerto Rico.
That's the only option.
You've got a vacation coming up.
Just go to Puerto Rico and press refresh a bunch of times on the Twitter app. That's the only option.
But actually, Megan, I think you're right that Portland is coming up because it's been on the table before, and I think it should definitely be a destination.
I think having two chefs killing it from Portland this year might have helped.
Although now that
they've done such an okay job of just portraying Boston, I'm kind of worried that they're going to come and make Portland look boring.
No. I don't know. I also felt like this was a great upswing for like just seeing like the foodie culture of Boston and people.
Yeah.
I loved all of the diners like feedback this time. I felt like everyone was really excited and thoughtful and like it was really cool.
And there was
There was a kid. She was adorable. Yeah, I guess. And I didn't feel like I got that same vibe from Seattle. I feel like Seattle came off as a little bit like snobby and weird. And that bummed me out. So it was nice to get a really warm and engaged vibe from Boston.
I mean, for part of it, Seattle really came off as Alaska.
Yeah, that's true too. Seattle was really just like a smear that like went north a lot.
Yeah, like the Yukon Trail. So
let's talk about this challenge.
The wrinkle was that the chefs weren't shopping for their food.
Which was so good, you guys. Oh man,
I really did
just keep yelling about how much I loved this episode all through the episode.
I liked this. It was super fun, and also I liked it because it basically wasn't really a challenge. It was just like you're going to have a pretty good pantry and cook whatever you want. Like, it was a good cook your own food, not too many plates, and
with
we got
a little
to watch...
bit of a, there was a little bit of a wrinkle. I mean, just like, you know, Adam didn't like the science-y stuff that Richard bought.
But he didn't use it. It wasn't, there was no requirement.
Stuff,
it wasn't,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also, they remind me, did they have a budget? I feel like they just got to buy as much food as they wanted.
And
there was no budget.
And originally, they were supposed to be in and out in 30 minutes. And then Gail, in her blog, said, but we didn't do that. We weren't going to let the producers push us around.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I wish I'd read. That's
so great.
Because they went in. That was one of the really fascinating parts is they were like, ready, set, shop. And Blaze takes off running. And the other
chef. Yeah, Blaze, top chef mode. Yeah.
Blaze
yeah.
basically has PTSD. It's like, I'm in the trenches. I'm in the trenches.
And all the other chefs are just like, oh, a grocery store.
Yeah, Padma and Gail are like looking at produce.
I mean, Padma actually, what was her line was like, I can't park in a Whole Foods parking lot in 30 minutes.
Yeah. Which Richard doesn't think Padma ever goes to the store herself.
Yeah.
Very reasonable guess.
And watching her carry those jackfruit around while pushing her cart was also its own kind of majesty.
It was just some weird stuff. Tom,
it was a little weird.
Tom used his I'm your boss thing on Richard to get the rack of lamb for his person.
Yeah.
That was pretty great.
Yeah, because like Tom was only shopping for May. And Gail was shopping for
everyone else had two people.
Yeah. I know. There's a cheat sheet that we made.
Well, so
I wasn't looking at my notes.
Actually, on the topic of Padma's jackfruit, let's do Chris?
Mailbag!
Lucas, by email, said, you guys talk a lot about magical elves and editing having a way, and we view the narrative, but what I noticed in this episode was a whole lot of direction to make Padma look weird.
Oh, yeah, she's a weirdo.
How does someone as delicate as Padma pick up two gigantic pieces of fruit at the same time and then have to figure out how to put them in the shopping cart? One at a time, you gorgeous dummy!
Well, she knew she wanted both. She didn't want anybody else stealing her jackfruit idea.
It's weird. I don't think of Padma as delicate. I think just because she's tall.
She's
in
tall.
My mind's eye. She's tall and like...
But she like works out a lot and stuff.
Yeah, no, she seems like...
She's
I mean,
a kid.
Yeah, I don't know. She just doesn't seem... She doesn't seem waifish, I guess. Like, she seems... She's still... I mean, she's gorgeous, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know how
she
to describe her.
She was half the size of one of those jackfruit, though. I mean, those jackfruit made her look a little waifish. They were just
although they did look like alien, like eggs from Ridley Scott's Alien.
Yeah, no, Blaze's line about the alien autopsy was actually quite hilarious.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. I had to give credit where credit was due. But yeah, so they did their shopping trip. Now I want to know how long it actually took.
Yeah, it probably took like an hour.
Just 90 minutes of like wandering Whole
Foods.
But
they tried to give the chefs like a good amount of protein and some good options, but not too many options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like Blaze had some agar and some nitrogen, which, side note, can you buy a tank of nitrogen at Whole Foods?
I don't know if you can or if they set it out from the Top Chef kitchen.
You just got to, like, know a guy?
Yeah. You buy some illicit liquid nitrogen in the parking lot?
Well, I'm wondering if you can even... Like, I don't think they have jackfruit at our...
They certainly do not have jackfruit at our Whole Foods. It would take up so much room, you'd notice.
So it must be, really big Whole Foods.
Yeah.
But it also might be a little bit on the seasonal side, since we know that it's not actually Thanksgiving time.
True.
Like,
but
it might be a summertime import. It might be a summertime import. You don't know.
It could be. I mean, I'm going to check our Whole Foods. I want to buy a jackfruit now. That's a life goal. Bucket list.
Yeah.
But jackfruit.
It was just so fun and wacky, and it felt like... I mean, I guess this felt like a relaxed episode, where it was like, you're cooking your food on stove equipment you've used before for a reasonable number of guests. You've got... a fairly broad pantry, and
everybody's serving out of styrofoam bowls.
Yeah, and we have 10 minutes of the chefs being personable, you know, like including Padma hazing Richard. Like,
because Richard needed one more thing, so then she pushed his cart to another part of the store and toppled over his fish accidentally.
I kind of loved watching her, like, her attitude about, like, I'm stealing away with Richard's cart. This is so fun, TV. Yeah.
And then it was so delighted to be practical joking.
it was so fun. Great.
And I would be totally happy if every episode of this Top Chef had Padma's mischief moment. I would love it if she played one practical joke a week, because it was so mild. Like, I moved your cart.
I moved your cart. And now go find your cart.
Knocking over the fish was pretty pretty
lean. Yeah, but that was an accident.
It was an accident, yeah.
But also, like, but I like, and then Richard took it as, like, a continuation of his whole life story where pretty girls make fun of him.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that so much.
That was great. Yeah, it was really enjoyable. And I also liked that them shopping for their chefs added this sort of, like, cheerleader element when they went to taste mm-hmm. the dishes. Mm-hmm. And that they all, like, they wanted them to cook their very best, and they were really excited when they felt like they were successful with the ingredients that picked out.
This is what this is what the lower number of chefs, the smaller groups is about, is cooking your food and everyone wanting to do a good job. It's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But then it also, I feel like it's a bittersweet time because smaller group of chefs, you know everyone better.
Yeah.
You start getting attached to people.
Except for George.
I mean, Adam said this too.
Except for George. Okay. And also, George, don't wear tank tops anymore. I don't like it. I want
like
you to stop.
Really,
Your gold chain is too thick. I just have problems with your attire.
The helmet hair straight back.
If he'd been wearing like a white shirt, I would have been fine. Like even a deep V. For some reason, that tank top really bummed me out.
Armpits are the worst part of any television show. Just don't. I even like when basketball players wear sleeves because I just hate seeing armpits, and so it just cover up your armpits, buddy. Get a sleeve.
Yeah. Nobody wants to know what's under there.
No.
But in all seriousness, I mean, Adam did say like, "Hey, this is going to be a tough elimination this time. We're going to lose part of the family." And then the one person who got eliminated was not somebody they were very tight with. So
yeah. So how do you guys feel about it? The male mostly seemed like they were pretty sad about Adam going home.
I was sad.
Yeah, I was a little sad. I mean, I feel like he's an interesting personality. I feel like he seems pretty self-involved in a way, like I don't know, like he also just has done so well, and
I thought he'd spent a lot of time in the middle. I thought he'd done, isn't that what Katsuji said, that he was always, he'd never
done
great,
he was kind
of
middle of the pack, and then people kept saying like there's no middle now, and so he had to go.
Except literally Katsuji was in the middle. That was weird.
Tom said
it was seven people, three on top, three on bottom, and Tom was like, there's no middle anymore. And Katsuji was just standing off to the side like, what am I doing?
I don't know.
I'm a tomatillo.
I think especially after seeing him on Restaurant Wars last week, just totally.
Yeah, that's rough.
Awesome.
Yeah, charming the pants off people.
Yeah,
he seems to have a big heart, and he's very passionate, and actually made a really classy exit, I think, and really passionate, and it made me like him even more. So I couldn't be more thrilled that he's doing well on LCK.
The only thing I had a problem with in his exit, and I know I'm being mean, but he said, I just didn't picture it ending this way, and I was like, I don't know, making a good dish but not quite as good as everybody? It seems like probably you should have pictured it that way. That's how the eliminations go.
If he has to go out, he's going to go out in second place, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like maybe it's just a lack of imagination that he never pictured himself going out that way. It seemed pretty reasonable that you would do good but not as good, and that you'd get eliminated and feel fine about it. I mean, that just seems like a normal. Anyway, good luck to him in Last Chance Kitchen, which we'll get to in a second. I just want to add one more mailbag.
Oh, really? Did you? Did you want to add a mailbag?
So John on Facebook just wanted to point out that one of the dishes was a chorizo and mussels.
And Dougie's dish.
Dougie.
Yeah, and that was Dougie's winning dish.
Tom referred to it as a classic Spanish dish, and Joan just wanted to point out that it's not. It's not a classic Spanish dish.
Joan, we're sorry.
Every time Tom says, quote, classic, me and my wife jumped on the sofa and yell at the screen, that's not classic Spanish. We do eat chorizo and mussels, but we don't see them together, not even in paella, because it doesn't have chorizo. So
that's really great.
Take that, Tom. You don't know classics.
I also really enjoy picturing Joan and his wife jumping on the couch and yelling at the screen.
Not classic Spanish.
No,
no. Make it stop.
That is delightful. So we have, a couple more mail things I want to get to, but let's do a Last Chance Kitchen. Last Chance to be on TV is back.
Yep, finally.
Finally. But, so what's going on with Last Chance Kitchen? So they started it really late, and they started it with 2 5-on-5?
Not 5-on-5, but they did it with 6 chefs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was 6 chefs and eliminated 5, and then it was the 2?
And then versus, they did a 6-way and then a 3-way.
Yeah.
And Rebecca,
two people got to win.
Right. Yeah. For some reason, two people won. Yeah. Enough. Yeah.
Did
yeah.
they? Okay. I would think next time they'd just do a. Just do a one-on-one.
It seems like they're going to be doing another three because they just eliminated a new chef. So yeah. what do you guys think of the big changes? What's going on?
I feel like they were trying to get rid of some of the, like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes there's some Last Chance Kitchen fatigue that happens. If you introduce it early, it just gets a little bit like, oh boy, what else can we do? So I liked that we're getting to the meat. And so you're not just like, oh, can this one person beat the next like 11 chefs? Probably not.
Right.
We're getting a little more concentrated.
Did it feel like a lower budget production this year?
The sound quality was pretty weird.
The sound was terrible. The lighting was really weird. And last year in New Orleans, they had this beautiful, huge kitchen. And this year, they looked like they were in a closet.
They were in a basement.
Well, it was like something. An L-shaped thing where because they would like be cooking one element of the dish one place and then they'd like go for a jog.
Yeah.
And like go find the frying pan that was like cooking in another part of the building. Like,
yeah. No, they, yeah. So, I mean, it could be that budget was different or just the space was weird.
Yeah, I wonder.
It's always felt like the B-team production was doing
for sure.
Last Chance Kitchen.
They also had something, like, I don't know what their budget was for the music, but they chose some really weird stuff. It was like a surrealistic nightmare, like, scene.
It was strange.
I didn't pick up on that at all, but now I really wish I had.
It sounded kind of like they were editing this and they were, like, using only the free music that comes with video editing software.
Mm. So we can't license out any more, like, goofy trombone music.
Well, what was it? I mean, I feel like Hidden Valley Ranch and the Glad family of products probably gave them plenty of money.
Probably gave them some Skrilla. I'm scared that we're going to have to watch them make ranch stuff. Like, yeah. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I would love this, especially because my favorite thing about Last Chance Kitchen is that the challenges are based on how the people went out. Like, the dry and slimy challenge was such a great... I thought that was such a great innovation. Like, using what had just happened to be a fun thing that's also still pretty wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that was great. Adam did great at it. Katie did fine. Rebecca did not do as well, which is fine. Actually, you know, the thing that struck me about Last Chance Kitchen is seeing all those chefs who were competing that first round. I didn't really remember liking any of them. They were the too many of the chefs that were on the team.
I really like Joy.
I like Joy. Yeah, I like Stacey.
I was rooting for her to win.
Stacey's, Stacey's getting weirder and weirder. She said that thing about how redemption is candy and she wants to eat all its cousins.
All its brothers and sisters.
Oh, brothers and sisters. And I was like, wait, but what are the brothers and sisters of redemption? And are they also candy?
Yeah,
like, what does that mean?
The big candy family? What?
And then Chris was like, wait, does that mean that candy is all related to other candy? Like, there's some kind of familial massacre every time you like open a bag of Jolly Ranchers. Like,
yeah, it's Jolly Ranchers, listen to your brother Snickers.
Yeah. Well, what's the Big Daddy? Isn't there a Chewy?
Charles didn't chew. Sugar Daddy.
Sugar Daddy, that's what
Sugar
it is.
Sugar Daddy is like a teeth removal device.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah. No, they literally, like, they'll literally pull out your fillings.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yes, quite. Just reach right in there and take what you have.
I like having Last Chance Kitchen back, but it does feel a little strange right now. The other thing I love is that it's just Tom. It's just Tom and the chefs. It's Tom unfiltered.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I mean, Tom's he's a good judge. He has good things to say about food. And when there's a decision, it's just like, yep, Adams was better.
Also, a really weird thing where the first few chefs that he eliminated, he was like, go sit on one of those stools. And then at the end of the first episode, the losing chef out of the last three, he was like, leave the kitchen. Why was there no stool?
No.
Like, we didn't plan a stool for you.
Well, the Glad family of products only gave us these six stools.
I was going to say, Hidden Valley didn't spring for an extra stool.
We can only use the free stools that came with our video editing software.
Go make us some dip in the back room.
Yeah, in fact, please, for all of this, your proteins will have to be encrusted in ranch powder.
I like it. I'd like there to be a ranch challenge. Let's do a couple of quick more mailbags before we go.
Mailbag.
Mailbag.
Lucas did say that he was addicted to the mailbag ding, so I hope you've gotten enough of it today, Lucas. He sent us your fix.
Yeah.
He sent us a great long email, and I don't have time for all of it, but do we have...
I do.
We're running out of time, but I want to say a couple of the things he said that I really liked. One was, do we have another favorite Padma out-of-character moment? So we had just the Padma's Mischief corner right now. And
yeah.
Lucas has been rewatching season 9, he said. And so there's a great time where there was like a rattlesnake in a quickfire. And Padma said, I want to see these motherfucking snakes in some motherfucking plates. That was pretty
yes.
fun.
Yeah. I still, my favorite Padma is always Boozy Padma.
Boozy Padma.
Yeah, Boozy Padma.
And
Boozy
Padma doing the breakfast in bed challenge.
That's what
with
I was
Jella Lawson
say.
Is still my favorite.
Oh,
thing.
God. It's just like my dream scenario.
Yeah.
That Padma shows up in your hotel room and asks you to make brunch?
No, it's just Nigella and Padma in a bed. Being oh. like, let's have more booze and delicious things.
Yeah.
And then they're like, put on a robe and join us. And I'm like, don't mind if I do.
That was the one. Wasn't that Blaze who was like, Padma
that
loves booze. And so I brought her like some
all
rum or something.
Yeah.
And then she
loved
like,
it.
Ooh, rum. She was so happy.
Well, like booze and like spicy things.
Yeah.
I feel like you just can't go wrong.
Love it. Luke has also pointed out, a few other people have talked about this too, whether or not the season is villainless at this point.
Mm. Yeah, Katsuji's kind of a weird dude, but he's not villain the way he was in a few episodes ago.
Yeah. I don't think there are villains.
No,
yeah,
I'm
with you there, Lucas.
I do think Katsuji is less fun because he's the most gamesmanship of anybody. Like, he's the one who seems most concerned with, like, in, like, the survivory kind of way, where it's, like,
yeah.
who's going to vote on who, and it's a little slimy, but he's definitely not a villain. He's too fun to be a villain.
Oh, that reminds me, though.
Yeah.
I have to say that Confessional Padma is my new favorite Padma.
Oh, that was
so cool
was
when
the
they were
the
all,
shopping,
like,
as we saw
talking
the judges
directly
confessional
to camera.
For the first time.
Oh, it was awesome. I don't know what it was about. Like, I think it's just because she's always like reading off of some secret teleprompter, and to have her just like candidly chatting to camera was like an amazing treat. It was so good.
She wasn't filtered through ADR and cards.
Like, I remember.
Actually, this reminds me. So we are all in agreement that Padma's the best, right? We all love Padma.
Well, Gale. I am a Gale. Super Gale fan.
And we know you don't like Gale.
You know,
that's fine.
I think
you're the only one. That's great.
Megan and I really disliked Gale for a while, but I think we've come around on
we
her.
We've definitely come around.
We've softened to
we've
her.
Come around.
Beautiful alien Gale Simmons. Be still my heart.
The season where she was getting married and they threw her she made them cater her party. It just felt weird. Anyway, she was weird for a while. But I like her now.
They've done weird life events for everyone, though. They helped Curtis propose to his girlfriend.
Oh, I loved that with Curtis. It was so fun.
And I think that they... It wasn't Gale, like, you must cater my
No, I know, but the way she... Like a... But it seemed like it, the way she was, like, describing it to him, she seemed very... Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But we love Padma. But on the Reddit, the subreddit about Top Chef, which I've started to enjoy recently. Hi, Reddit. r/Top Chef. Anyway, there was a discussion about what qualifies Padma to be a food judge. And... There's some general feeling that, like, you know, she's just a model. Who cares what she has to say about food?
But she made a cookbook, which you guys all said to me when I was like, yeah, I mean, Padma's pretty. And
she wrote a cookbook.
So I
was
like,
which was called Spicy and Boozy or something.
No, it was four adjectives. It was like spicy, sweet, something. Acid.
Boozy,
boozy, forgetful. No, I mean, the thing is, at least here's what I've heard and read, is that she was initially sort of like a beautiful, person who presented well on camera and then also liked food. So they had her as the host, similar to what they did the first season of Top Chef.
Remember the host in the first season of Top Chef and then never speak ill of Padma again.
Over time, over the years, she's become more and more and more of a foodie, and her opinions are better and better, and she's actually developed into a good cook at home. And you know, the thing about the cookbook that somebody said, I forget what it was, maybe it was one of the chefs, was she's not a chef, but she's a good cook. And like, this is a good, like, sort of cooks, like home cook sort of cookbook.
Those are the cookbooks that I really enjoy. Like, I really love the good home cookbook.
Yeah, so a lot of chefs,
because it's
chef
actually realistic to cook
are
from.
Like, well, yeah, so go to your immersion circulator.
Yeah.
And, like, tell stuff.
Or they're trying to translate what they do in a professional kitchen to the home. I mean, it's not like they never cook at home, but they're so busy that maybe they don't as much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
agreed.
But
I guess I, so I don't think we should ever discount the fact that she's a good host, and that's a tough job. Like, yeah, she does it so well, and Heidi Klum does it so well. But, like, the first season of Top Chef, the first season of Top Chef Canada, the other, Curtis does a great job, but we've had some other people pop in and out of the spinoffs. It's a real tricky job, and so no, like, that is worthy on its own. But also, if there's something that's going to qualify you for tasting food on Top Chef, it's having tasted food on Top Chef for 12 seasons.
Yeah. And I also think, our other, even just last season, I think we noticed that there was a pretty sharp uptick in her food criticism and like the sharpness of it and her being more comfortable like jumping in and giving her opinions.
Which has been great.
It used to be that her opinion was always secondary to the, you know, like Gail, food and wine editor, Tom, head judge, master chef, all this stuff. And it was like, Padma would be like the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What were you going to say, Alex?
Which is to her credit that it didn't seem like she was ever overselling her own abilities, and she's only gotten more confident judging as she's gotten better at it. So which is hugely to her credit.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Cool. One other thought about the villainless thing. Lucas wanted to know, do we think that a show like this, do we think it needs villains, or do we like, in order to enjoy it more, or like, what about like Top Chef Masters, which is pretty much villainless, or Duels, which is all villains? How do we feel about villains?
I think it depends on your reality TV taste. And I think that people are more and more, I don't know. I guess it seems like there was a real movement toward kind of the trashy end of the spectrum for reality TV, where everyone isn't there to make friends and it's all about backstabbing.
Like, for example, on Top Chef Canada this last season, for some reason.
Oh, I really stopped watching that show.
So bad. I loved it for the first two seasons. Then it was like, what if it was all villains? Every episode is men versus women. Someone will die in a fire. It was so weird.
What have you wrought?
I really, Sponge towels. Cannot be contained.
Ever since they switched to McEwen Foods, it got less good.
It's true. But I was just going to say, I've always regarded Top Chef as a somewhat safe space from that kind of crap. Mm-hmm. And then I think Top Chef Masters is a less successful show for some people because it really doesn't pander to that at all.
Right.
But I actually love that about it.
Yep.
So,
I don't need a villain.
I don't either.
I really think
no.
I agree. Yeah. I know that some people do.
And I also am too invested in justice, as I kept shouting about in the Nicholas Elmy situation.
Yeah. And with Dushat. Yeah, justice. We want justice.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I know that friend of the show, Caitlin, only likes when the judges are mean to the chefs. That's her favorite part. I like everybody. I mean, we've said this before. The reason I think the show is so much better than most other reality shows or other game shows is that these are people, amazingly talented people, doing the thing they're great at, and other people who are great at responding to that and appreciating it. Like, it's really fun. I like the top of it. I don't like villains. I think the show could be villainless forever, and I would love it. That's what I loved about Masters, is that it was pretty much villainless, and that's why it's not as successful, perhaps. But it's so fun to watch just everyone respect each other. It's great.
Yeah.
Right. But you have to tell, like, from an editing perspective, I mean, every episode, they're trying to tell some kind of story.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you don't have a villain, it's a different kind of story that you have to tell.
Yeah,
I think having a villain makes things easy.
Yeah, you need some chewy bits. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
But I will say, I mean, not to be too assertive about Adam, but that's part of what I really liked about him, is that he is just so, in some ways, he ends up just being so purely passionate and like, and just like into cooking and food in a way that rang true with me. And I think I really enjoyed seeing that perspective over and over again.
Yeah, I think he's going to do well at Last Chance Kitchen for a little while, because the next people I think are probably going to be eliminated in some order are Katsuji and May. Or not May, Melissa.
I want Melissa to go.
I think it's Melissa's turn. If we're doing a prediction, for sure it's be Melissa next. And
she keeps... And
I like her. I love her side head. I think she's great.
Yeah. You love her haircut?
I like her
What
haircut.
Else do you like about her?
She seems really nice, but she has been very in the middle. She's not done any really great.
She needs to learn, like, she keeps making the same mistake where she's like, well, I really wanted to show off my knife skills. And they're like, we don't care.
Yeah, this is not. It's not once. I don't think they've cared about that since season two.
Top knife skills.
Their riposte about how her knife skills are always on point was interesting, because it made me wonder if there's feedback that's positive that we don't necessarily have time to see. They're always like, if they're always like, Melissa, knife work excellent again. Like, I loved how you made me a throwing star out of some leeks, but also let's focus on how this is still a salad.
Yeah, that was such a weird defense. I wanted to have a lot of cuts. It just doesn't seem like at this point you should still be making that as your answer.
The salad people say that all the time, though. When you're like, 6 hours later, you made me a salad. And they're like, well, my knife work was incredible. Like,
yeah, yeah. And it never impresses the judges.
To that. Yeah.
Yeah, no one's ever been like, yeah, knife work was out of the park. So
I mean,
thanks so much.
Knife work, like when you do like a tartare, where the knife work might be the difference between you getting poisoned and it being amazing, then they're really complimentary. But like on salads, they're never like, well, you great dice on the carrot.
I feel like it's a good thing on top of other good. Like it's like it's a good like frosting on the cake, but it's not like no one wants.
You can't
to
carry.
Eat Well,
I guess. Yeah, I mean,
can't
truly
carry
awful night work.
Except in tartare, where the goal is to cut out all the poison parts of the meat.
I'm not
sure that we know how tartare works.
We don't know what tartare is, which is why we won't be getting that James Beard podcast award.
The other, that reminds me of season one. Sorry, one of my favorite Top Chef historical moments where they had a pile of fruit, and they were like, "Show us your knife skills." And
then somebody just wanted to show off the whole
back
fruit.
Hole.
Yeah, they're like, "This is the best way to display fruit."
Just remember that anytime you feel like this season isn't like a season isn't as competitive as a previous season. Just remember season one, the whole fruit basket. one last comment. We have so much mail that I'm not going to be able to get to today, but one last thing that I thought was just from Jay.
Mailbag!
Jay number two, who has now sent us Facebook messages, email, and has commented on packyourmics.com, so he's tested all of the methods. Oh, and he also does tweet at us at packyourmics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's egotting. In terms of getting in touch with us.
Next, you're going to have to dig up our hidden Google Voice phone number and leave us a voicemail.
Yeah, make it up. Figure it out. Get us that message.
So he just asked, he had a bunch of other good points, but the one I wanted to use is he said, how weird was it that they mentioned the exact address of the Top Chef contestant house?
That was super weird.
Why was that? It was weird. Why did they do that?
I guess it's because...
Oh, no, go ahead.
Theory, Megan,
I mean, I know the answer.
I guess it's because maybe by the time the show aired, the chefs weren't there anymore, and maybe they were trying to, like, sell apartments in that, like, or condos.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing in the Seattle show. It was that brand new condo tower.
Yeah.
And they called it the Olive 8. They showed the intersection.
It's a really gross part of downtown, or it was when I lived there. So that was a sad thing. A beautiful building if you don't look at anything around it.
So what was your theory, Tanya, on why they did this?
Oh, my theory is that that's what the building is actually called. It's not like the, you know, it's not like Flat Hotel or whatever that...
Wensley Gardens or something.
It's not in the middle of England.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, Tanya, and so it was like an advertisement for the...
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure the building put them up there it's a new building. They just developed it. They're trying to sell condos.
Yeah, I was like, it's time to shill for Top Chef, 1330, whatever you are.
Yeah.
And okay, super, super duper last from Jay also. It was glossed over in the... It got glossed over in the preview gate rumble, but how does everyone feel about the finale taking place in Mexico?
I like it. I love Mexican food.
I didn't catch that it was
Yeah, so I guess my question is, did we know that? How did I miss that?
Oh, what if Katsuchi doesn't make the final?
Wait, but when did we find out that it was taking place in Mexico? Where was that?
No, I didn't see
any
of
didn't
that.
Watch the preview this time.
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, I was... okay, I passed out, apparently.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that we saw or noticed that part, but
I was trying to corroborate it, and I couldn't, but it makes perfect sense for some of the stuff they've done before, and it would be delightful. Yeah.
It
would
be delightful. There's...
Rick
Bayless?
Yeah, Rick Bayless.
Rick Bayless, and he can teach them how to make...
Mole.
Oh, that was amazing.
I mean, if it's Oaxacan food, you know, game over. It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But
Mexico
has such a wide range of flavors. It's a great cuisine. I think it'll be great to do
that time. An interesting change of scene, for sure.
Yeah.
It depends on where in Mexico, because, again, I don't know this. But, like, if they were, like, in Los Cabos, because they're trying to sell... that you know like
trying to sell all of Los Cabos
Top Chef is going timeshare.
Well, that's what they did with that cruise ship where they had to eat in that in Seattle where they had to eat in that weird restaurant that the judges clearly hated,
like the crazy restaurant.
This just makes me more and more depressed about the Seattle season. If people want to chime in and like remind me that the Seattle season wasn't like a total...
Kristen
was great, you're right.
Was so
it
good.
Was an awesome season.
It was a real good
season.
They pulled Gooey Duck out of the ground. They ate in the spinning restaurant on top of the Space Needle. But for some reason, and it had the big Siege burger fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true. One of the enduring quotes. That's true. Okay. I'll be left.
There was some really great stuff, but that cruise ship was so ridiculous.
That was awful. Terrible.
What if your food came in drawers? Enjoy that.
Enjoy that. Maybe it has lights inside of it.
so weird.
We really try to sell on the presentation and undersell on the flavor.
Yeah.
We're trying to make a lot of cuts.
The canless challenge that was really
food cool. isn't what happens after you see food.
Yeah. The canless challenge was good.
The canless challenge was cool. Yeah. And that the Caesar salad, one of the only times a salad has won.
Yeah. All right. We really got to wrap this up. So,
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. This has been so much fun. podcast@read-sweep.com if you want to email us at packyourmics on Twitter. packyourmics.com is the address. We have an open comment thread each week as soon as the show airs, so you can jump in there and just comment on the website if you want, or facebook.com/packyourmics. We love to hear from you. Sorry if we didn't get to all of the mail. We'll get as much as we can every week, and we enjoy it. We look forward to talking to you next week, episode 9. It should be fun. Thanks for joining us, Chris and Tanya in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being here, Megan.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, Megan.
Hopefully we'll be back with everybody next week. We miss Ezra and Sarah and Baby.
Yeah, we miss you guys. Sad. Hope you had fun.
Maybe next week we'll line you up and let you guys vote for which of you you want to be back on the podcast.
They'll just choose Caleb.
Everyone's going to choose Caleb.
Who will then just knock the mic over.
I feel like Caleb got to cook his food. I don't...
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Chris, pack your mics and go. Bye.
Ah!
Surprise elimination. Well, I had a good run, I guess. But if you can't be an emotional mess on national television, you're not doing it right.